Welcome to Torah Yomecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Ilana Flamenhaft, and today we will be learning Parshat Bet Chanan. Our Parsha begins in Chapter 3, Verse 23, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, and ends in Chapter 7, Verse 11, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. It contains the conclusion of Moshe's first speech and the beginning of Moshe's second speech in Sefer Devarim. The previous Parsha concluded with words of encouragement that Moshe gave Yehoshua as the nation prepared to enter Eretz Canaan, the land of Israel. Moshe begins our Parsha by pleading to Hashem to cancel the decree barring him from entering the land. Moshe then proceeds to emphasize to those waiting to enter the land the importance of fulfilling the laws of the Torah. Moshe blends rebuke and encouragement with a few specific laws. The prohibition of idolatry is highlighted, and being careful not to fall under the influence of the people currently living in the land. Moshe stresses to the nation that their continued existence in the land should not be taken for granted, but is dependent on their deeds. Then Moshe designates three cities on the eastern side of the Jordan River, in land already conquered. Moshe thus established that this region was not merely conquered land, but it possessed a certain degree of the sanctity already of the land of Israel. In chapter 5, Moshe describes Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, as a reminder to the older people who had witnessed it, and to describe the occasion to the younger generation. He repeated the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, and related the entire experience of the event. This version of the Decalogue, the Ten Statements in Va'et Chanan, is quite different from the version in Shmot in Parshat Yitro. One example can be found in the Fourth Commandment. In Shmot, we are told Zachor, remember Shabbos. Here in our Parsha, we are told Shamor, keep Shabbos. In Shmot, we are told to keep Shabbos because Hashem created heaven and earth. While in our Parsha, we keep Shabbos as a remembrance of the redemption from Egypt. There are dozens of such differences. The Ibn Ezra in Shmot explained that Moshe in Devarim was paraphrasing, adding clarifying reasons, or rearranging phrasing because he was conveying the same divine message in his own words, not reproducing a verbatim transcript. Minor variations in phrasing across the two tellings are therefore not contradictions. They're simply the natural result of the same truth being expressed twice in two different moments by two different speakers, Hashem directly at Har Sinai, then Moshe recounting it in Devarim. In chapter 6, Moshe began addressing the people in the present. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4 is, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. The two declarations are the essence and faith of the people. It is followed by verses 5 through 9, the paragraph of Yahavta et Hashem Elokecha, you shall love the Lord your God. This is, in fact, the first time in the Torah where a person is commanded to love Hashem. The final section of the Parsha contains several themes related to memory. Concern that the memory of Hashem's kindness will be erased when Bnei Israel become accustomed to all of the good economic conditions in Canaan. He mentions the exodus from Egypt in order to strengthen their commitment to observing the Torah, and concludes with again warning the people against the negative influence of the Canaanites and instructs Bnei Israel to destroy them along with all of their idols. The majority of Sefer Devarim is written from Moshe's personal perspective. Yet, nearly all of the stories recorded are not personal in nature, but apply to the entire nation. The first passage of our Parsha is the exception. Moshe, in the first words of the Parsha, said, Ve'etchanan el Hashem ba'et hahi lemor. I pleaded with God at that time, saying, Hashem Elokim, hatzachi lota larod et avdecha et gad lacha ve'yadcha chazaka, asher mi el b'shamayim uv'aretz, asher yaseh kemasecha kegvuratecha. You've only just begun to show me how great you are and how strong your hand is. No God anywhere, in heaven or on earth, can do the mighty things you do. Let me please cross over and see the good land on the other side of the Jordan, this good mountain and the Livanon. V'yitaber Hashem bi l'manechem, v'lo shama elai, v'yomer Hashem elai, rav lach, al tosef taber elai oba devarze. But Hashem became angry at me because of you and would not listen to me. Hashem said to me, it is too much for you. Do not continue to speak to me further about this matter. Hashem told Moshe in Chukat, Bamidbar 20:12 in Mei Meriva, that because Moshe did not believe in Hashem, to sanctify Hashem before the eyes of the children of Israel, he would not be allowed to enter the land of Canaan. Moshe was relaying here how he prayed to Hashem to be allowed to enter the land. Let us analyze these psukim closely and understand Moshe's prayer on a deeper level. The first word and name of the parsha, Ve'etchanan, I pleaded, implored, needs to be understood. The rabbis say that there are 10 different terms for prayer, and Chanan, the root of our word, is one of them. What is the significance of Moshe praying through that word choice? Rashi explains that all forms of the verb Chanan signify an ex gratia gift. Ex gratia is Latin for out of grace or out of kindness. Moshe was not making the claim that he deserved to have his request fulfilled, but that Hashem should nullify the decree out of mercy. When does Ba'etahi, at that time, refer to? The Mefarshim commentaries have many opinions about what time period is referred to. It is puzzling that this tefillah of Moshe's is brought here and not when he received the decree. The Abarbanel answers the question by focusing on the language of the decree. Lo taviyu et hakahal hazeh el ha'aretz asher natati lahem. You shall not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them. And explains that Moshe said this prayer after the battles with the Amorite kings Sihon and Og, when the transfer of leadership to Yehoshua was announced. Moshe thought that the decree was that he could not lead the children of Israel into the land, but maybe that he himself could go under Yehoshua's leadership. Hashem's answer was that Moshe could not enter the land at all in any way. How do we understand that? Moshe was so righteous. Why wouldn't Hashem annul the decree and let Moshe enter the land? There are many opinions and ideas as to why Moshe was not permitted to enter Eretz Canaan. The most straightforward explanation is from the school of Rabbi Yishmael, that a person is judged in accordance with his stature, and therefore a righteous individual will be punished greatly due to any sins he committed. So Moshe received a severe consequence for his sin at Mei Meriva, and it could not be undone. The Or HaChaim suggests, based on the Gemara and Sota, that the Beit HaMikdash, if built by Moshe, would be permanently indestructible, meaning Hashem would have no target to absorb the punishment for Israel's sins, which would have tragic consequences, that the nation itself, the people, would bear the punishment themselves. Instead, Hefiga Kadosh Baruch Hu Chamato Ba'etzim U'Ba'avanim V'lo Be'banav. Hashem released his anger on trees and stones and not on his children. This is alluded to in Megillat Eicha, chapter 4, verse 11, which we will read on Tisha B'Av. Kila Hashem et Chamato, Shafach Harona Po, Vayitzad Eish B'Tzion, V'Tochal Yesodotea. Hashem gave full vent to fury and poured out blazing wrath, kindling a fire in Zion that consumed its foundations. While the Pasuk in Eicha itself doesn't use the word stones, avanim, directly, that's the implication of the word foundations, the foundations of the temple. Therefore, Moshe was not permitted to enter the land of Canaan. But why would Moshe say that Hashem got angry at him because of Bnei Israel? Moshe did not enter Eretz Yisrael because instead of addressing the rock, he hit it. It was not the fault of Am Yisrael that Moshe made a mistake, but Moshe pleaded for forgiveness alone. Rav Soloveitchik explained that had the people joined him in prayer, the Holy One would have been forced to respond. Had the people possessed the sensitivity and love for Moshe, similar to that love that Moshe felt for them, they would have torn the decree into shreds. The Midrash states that had the community joined Moshe in his prayer, Hashem would have granted Moshe's request. Hashem would not have rejected the prayer of the many. It was Bnei Israel's fault that Moshe could not enter the land and died in the desert. We've explored why Moshe asked Hashem now to allow him to enter the land, as well as why ultimately Moshe was not allowed to. But why did Hashem say, Rav lach, it is too much for you? Why wouldn't Hashem let Moshe continue to daven? The Gemara in Sota 13b explains, Shelo yamru harav kama kashe v'talmid kama sarvan. That Hashem was telling Moshe, it's too much for you to pray so much for something that I will not allow. If you continue to pray, it will seem very improper for both of us. People will say Hashem is so difficult and unbending, and Moshe is so stubborn, refusing to realize that he will not get what he wants. Another way of understanding Hashem telling Moshe to stop davening is based on the Midrash, that the gematria, numerical value of Ve'etchanan, I implored, equals 515, teaching that Moshe prayed 515 times to Hashem. Rabbi Chaim Chernowitz, the Be'er Maim Chaim, explained that if Moshe had davened a 516th time, Hashem would have granted his request, which would have had devastating consequences for the Jewish people. It is remarkable that Moshe Rabbeinu would have actually been able to annul the divine decree through prayer. Perhaps more remarkable, however, is that he didn't carry through and cancel the decree. That is another way of understanding why Moshe told the people that it was their fault. Moshe could have prayed to enter one more time and would have been granted his request. The reason he didn't was because entering the land would have led to their destruction. So Moshe did not ask that one final time to guarantee the future of the nation he loved so dearly. Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all human beings, father of all prophets, poured out his soul in prayer and in an extraordinary and lofty way, reciting 515 prayers, and yet they seemed to go unanswered. Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, in his Minchas Asher, explains that in truth, Hashem hears the prayer of every mouth. It's just that Hashem alone knows what is truly good for a person, and sometimes a person's prayers are heard and even answered in a way that he does not know, and that his understanding cannot grasp. Sometimes a person prays for himself, and Hashem instead blesses his children and grandchildren. Sometimes a person prays for wealth and honor, and Hashem grants him long life instead. Sometimes a person prays in one place, and Hashem answers him in a completely different place. This reminds me of Jen Ehrlich's story on H.com about the day her son Binyamin was killed in Gaza. Jen had a premonition that morning and found herself crying uncontrollably. She was in synagogue Saturday morning when she started to choke up and had to go home. Sitting at her table, she began to bawl again with no explanation. Her 10-year-old daughter tried to comfort her and hugged her tightly. Jen pulled herself together and explained, "I just wish we could all have Shabbos together." She and her daughter prayed and cried together. Jen even hosted guests for lunch. At 4 p.m., they heard a knock on the door. Soldiers arrived to inform her of Binyamin's death. Jen knew deep down, but asked them what time it happened. They answered, "The battle took place between 9:30 and 10:30 a.m. It was exactly the time she was crying and praying. Jen feels confident that her prayers did not go unanswered. Perhaps they prevented her son from suffering or saved a different soldier. She believes that they accomplished something. Rav Asher Weiss writes that the Baal Shem Tov taught that one of the main reasons people come to treat prayer with disrespect is that sometimes a person prays with all his heart, asking Hashem for what he needs, and when he doesn't see his request fulfilled, he despairs and assumes his prayer simply wasn't heard. But in truth, Hashem hears the prayer of every mouth. The prayer is never actually ignored, even when it seems that way. So when we pour out our hearts and don't see the answer we hoped for, let us not make the mistake of thinking Hashem isn't listening. The gates are never closed, only the answer looks different than we expect it to look. If even Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah could be answered in a way he couldn't perceive, how much more should we trust that our own prayers are heard, even when the answer isn't the one we prayed for? Have an easy and meaningful fast and a good Shabbos.